Sand Road, which had been a kennel, and started a small organic farm there and continued the work of the foundation. But I had an idea with a friend of mine in Woodstock, who was a builder. We were going to start a community that was totally solar powered, many, many farms. And we knew what this piece of land, and he had the plans for the houses. And I went over to have a meeting with him about it, and he said, "How's the divorce going?" And I said, "Oh, you know, she keeps not showing up, and my accounts are frozen." And it just goes on and on and on. I want it over with. He said, "That's what I hear from everybody. You know, it's just one thing after another. Everybody I know, and so and so and so and so, and Gloria Jennings." I said, "What?" Well, she was an old friend of mine from Woodstock. She and her husband and my former wife and I were socialized together. I taught her daughter to shoot a bow and arrow when she was three. And she was a very intelligent, attractive, nice lady. And so I called her up. And now that we're both single, how'd you like to have lunch with an old friend? Well,
good for you.
Didn't know what fireworks were going to happen, because that's when it all happened. And it's been 30-some years of a very great marriage.
And how wonderful for both of you.
Yeah, well, we both got bailed out. Anyway, that was time to get the hell out of the environmental business. And we wanted an encore career that we could share together. And we were both antiques collectors. And she had had a very exclusive women's shop, and I had been in the advertising business. So between her merchandising experience and my advertising experience, we took a year off and we studied Colonial American Antiques and opened Buckley & Buckley Antiques. And
a business made in heaven.
Yeah. At the same time, I was trying to study, and Wallace Nutting believed, he's one of our all-time experts, he believed that he really didn't understand an antique until he tried to duplicate it. And then if he went through the procedures and understood the nuances and the whys, then you knew about the antique. Well, he had a big shop, but I didn't. And having been a model builder all my life, I started copying antiques in miniature. Bingo, we had a second business, Don Buckley Custom Miniatures. And I became a fellow of the International Guild of Miniature Artisans. And I taught at their summer seminar in Castine, Maine. And we're doing miniature shows and antique shows. And Gloria said, "We can't keep this up on Sand Road in Canaan. We got to have a place that has a, you know, it doesn't, let's move." Well, bingo. Here's this house on Main Street in Salisbury, built by Captain Coffey and was previously occupied by Judge Warner, and is on the market. Well, we looked at it and we got a contractor, and he said, "Don't do it, don't do it. There's so much has to be done." And we passed. And then a binder got signed on it, and we died. And the binder fell through, and we went back to Jenny Gordon, Borden, and said, could we take a look again? She said, "Well, here are the keys, but you're crazy." At any rate, we did buy it with another contractor and had major, major restoration done to it. And we've been here now for 32 years, and of all the 10 places I have lived in this world of mine, this is where I'm happiest and most at home. So that's how we got here, where we got. I was a founding member of the Housatonics, and Dave Heck and I both started a thing called the Iron Yankees of the CNE, and we were trying to build an entire model of the CNE railroad operation. And we had some helpers at first, but it ended up that Dave built the Lakeville model, which is in the library, and I built the Salisbury model, which is in the library. And then I was chairman of the deacons at the Congregational Church, and Gloria was head of the ushers committee. And we've been fairly active in the town affairs, but the pressure of the business for most of those 30 years has kept us having to work more than seniors perhaps should. At this point, the antiques business is absolutely dead. It's not merely the economy, it's the road show. what once was the custom of the antiques business being knowledgeable dealers assisting dedicated collectors to build collections is now some guy that lucked out at a tag sale and got something like a rock star's underpants for $1 million.
Tell me a little bit more about the Salisbury diorama.
Well, you remember Jimmy Du Bois?
Oh, definitely.
Well, Jimmy was like my walking source of what really was going on prior to World War I. And I found it fascinating that Shagaroy, which is now Le Bon's, was an immense stable.
Mm.
And we learned what buildings were here, what buildings weren't here. And I tried then to reconstruct from old photographs and from Jimmy's description each of the buildings that existed. I'm told that there are some glaring errors there, that I'm 50 years off on this or that, but for the most part, it's what Salisbury looked like before it became overly gentrified. And the model of the town hall is the one with pillars, thank you. The original one with pillars.
And what year would that be, the town that you created?
I tried to make it late 19th century.
So it would be the same time frame as when Judge Warner...
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I never really knew Judge Warner. It's just that he had owned this house prior to, before we had, and then he had left it in the care of his spinster sisters, who lived in smaller and smaller portions of it, closing the house down, which is why it was in such need of work. But it had also been Victorianized, and we wanted to try to bring it back to its true look of the late 18th century. The first thing was it had gigantic cast iron radiators everywhere. So we took them out and with Frank Perotti worked out a rather unique heating system whereby we put in a hot water boiler system in the basement and then ran piping to air handlers so that we didn't have to have ductwork going through an 18th century structure. So the air handlers in the basement supply the heat in the first floor, and the air handlers in the attic supply the heat in the second floor. There was a tremendous Victorian arch between the living room and the dining room. And we ripped that out, and I designed a wall for the living room of raised paneling. And it looks like it's been here forever. We're sitting now in the keeping room, which was the judge's library. And when we were doing the restoration here, was ripping out a lot of the things, people would come by and say, you're not changing the mantle, because everybody had tea or coffee or something with the judge in this room with his bookcases. So the cherry mantle has this motto on it, old wood to burn, old wine to drink, old friends to trust. And I think it is a reproduction of what was there before the fire of 1918.
Probably.
But nevertheless, that is the original cooking fireplace of the keeping room. And so we designed the kitchen around it. All of the cabinetry is cherry matching the fire mantle, and we spend the majority of our time in this room.
I can see why.
Well, it's comfortable, and it's got a lot of possibility. You know, you can do a lot of different things in it.
A multi-purpose room.
Yeah. John Mulville was the builder who helped us do the majority of the work, and. Well, I remember I looked at, it's a center chimney here, and the center chimney had one in this room, one in the living room, and one, what is now the library. That one was sealed when the oil burner was put in so that they could use that flue. And then there's one in the master bedroom and one in the guest bedroom. So there were five fireplaces on the center chimney. It's like 18 feet square in the basement with an Indian room. Where you can.
Now, what is an Indian room?
Yes, you can crawl in there when the house is burned down.
Okay.
Not very comfortable, you know. You got to get on your hands and knees and your belly, but at any rate, I looked at the stack and it was kind of a mess. And I got a guy in to look at it. And I said, can you fix it? He said, oh, yeah. I said, can you do it without hurting the roof? He said, doesn't matter, you need a new roof anyway.
Ouch.
So, a new roof, a new heating system, a total rewiring, new floors, but they are 18th century lumber, which is sold by the inch.
Yes, it would be.
And they have no polyurethane on them, they have only butcher's wax. And then twice a year it gets a coat.
Is it a stone foundation?
The house?
Mm-hmm.
It's carved into stone. Half of it is into a cliff and the rest of it is laid up stone.
Okay.
We had a so-called expert come in to try to help us to determine the true age of the house. And she concluded that the new wing built in 1813 was the original house and this was added to it. And she's totally, totally wrong. But we do know that that wing was added in 13. And this house, Captain Coffing built in the late 18th century. So it's, I don't know how much longer we're going to operate the antiques business. Both of us have survived cancer twice. And I'm 87 and Gloria's 79. I had an old war injury with bone chips in my right wrist. And they were starting to grow a cyst around it. So I decided to have something done about it. And he decided to give me a carpal tunnel syndrome freebie while he was at it. And it was a total failure, and I was in utter agony and pain.
Oh, my.
And unable to use my hand. And so they put me on heavy doses of ibuprofen. And I hemorrhaged.
Mm-hmm.
And they took me to the hospital and said, guess what? You have colon cancer.
Oh, lovely.
But since we found it fast and first, instead of
later and longer,
instead of our revenge against by, I just sent him a thank you note for the early detection. Gloria had advanced Hodgkin's 20 years ago. She went through 15 months of chemotherapy.
Oh.
And then a couple years ago, she had lung cancer and had surgery. But both of us, we are fairly religious people, and we think that where the medicine didn't work, he did.
God is watching over special people. That makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Speaking of religion, tell us a little bit about the Congregational Church and your activities there.
Well, I was a Christian Scientist as a child. As I matured, I had differences with the degree of dependence solely on religion and the rejection of gifts that he had given to people, like medical knowledge. And I couldn't accept the fact that the beauty wasn't real. So for a long time, I became unaffiliated. In World War II, Bupers failed to assign a chaplain to our destroyer. And because I was the only officer on the ship who made his crew pray before going into general quarters, I was appointed the chaplain. I had a buryment at sea. In Baltimore, I decided I wanted to get involved, so I joined the Unitarian Church there, and found out that I was fronting, because I was their communications director, I was fronting the largest communist cell in Baltimore.
Oh, lucky you.
Mm-hmm. So I dropped out of that and continued to be unaffiliated until we got here. just at about the time that Dick came, I thought, you know, the whole Pilgrim concept of a self-governing congregation appeals to me.
And you mean Dick Tabor?
Yeah. No, but the fact that you don't have no Pope, you don't have no Vatican, you don't have no deacons.
You don't have a hierarchy.
Yeah, right. And I like that. And so we tried it. And Dick and I immediately had a relationship. And first thing I know, I was a freshman deacon. And there was a powerful and wealthy member of the church who wanted to replace Dick with a crony of his own. And he waited until Dick was on his first sabbatical to attack him, and even Joanne in her Sunday school. And I got a letter of endorsement from the Board of Deacons, the Board of Trustees, and 50 congregational members of the parish. And the gentleman withdrew and left the church, and Dick survived.
And he's just been made...
Well, then he served the church for 27 years. So then I got a second tour or a term as chairman of the deacons, and I did some things that he and I have been trying to accomplish for a long time. It used to be that communion was prepared and cleaned up by the women and served by the men. And I said, no way. We are going to equally clean it, we're going to equally serve it, and we're going to equally clean it up. That was considered highly controversial.
It would be.
The family album for the church was a terrible job. It was done by a commercial outfit. And Dick was unhappy with it. I said, okay, old ad man goes to work. I wrote it, I laid it out, I set up a photo studio in the Sunday school area. Anybody who couldn't make it to the commercial did it and produced that. And I was working pretty much full time with the church and very much as Dick's right hand.
Excellent.
And I missed him terribly. I have misgivings about some of the function of the UCC. It's as though we have invented our own Vatican. I think we're giving up too much of our own control of the church, in that he was not allowed any contact with the church when he retired. It's a rule to allow the interim or the new pastor to be settled without competition.
But that's the United Church of Christ. That's not the Congregational Church as it was originally.
No, but but
you're now part of the...
The Congregational Church is now...
Part
that's
of,
the same
yes.
thing. At any rate, there was an interim pastor, Steve...
Steve who?
I can't think of his last name. He was openly gay, and kind of opinionated, but he did a good job as an interim until we got Diane Montecantagna, and she is wonderful. She is absolutely great. Her enthusiasm and her love of what she's doing. Dick was a great pastor in the way he did things other than the pulpit. He was not a spellbinding preacher.
No, he was not, but he was a wonderful comforter.
Exactly. And now that he has been made pastor emeritus, he is back within the family of the church. And I think that his ability to back Diane, it's a wonderful, wonderful
thing. It's a good combination.
It's a great combination. Great combination. And
is there anything that you would like to add to this interview that we haven't covered? Because we've got about 10 minutes left.
Gee, I can't think of anything really that's think I've covered a lot. You know, I've done so much in my life. I was a musician. I was an ad man. I was an environmentalist. I was an organic farmer. I was an antiques dealer. I was a miniaturist. And I'm an author. I forgot. I wrote a book.
Tell us about the book.
I wrote a book called Ad Man in the Garden of Eden. And it's a tell-all about the golden age of the advertising business. I do not dare self-publish it because I blow the whistle on some very important people, and I've got to have a major publishing house behind me with a legal department. Some of the leading families of New York are involved.
That would be a little dicey.
It's a little dicey. At any rate, it's all done about the story from the beginning of when I got out of the service until I left the business and the farm. But the thing that I like about it, in the first chapter, that the similarity between the ad man and Adam,
uh-huh,
is they both would have been a lot better off if they'd read the sign, "Watch out for snakes."
We'll leave it there, and thank you so very much for your time.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.